우선은 한국의 강변을 세제 즉 세제들이야.
So to sit inside the hall seems much cooler for me. But if I could see the people, the audience to whom I'm giving this teaching, it feels like alive. Although you can see my image on the television screens, but if I could see you and you could see me directly, it feels like we are having a live discourse between each other. How many hours did I spend on reading the text? For about 1 hour after the initial introductory talk. So I covered around 20 pages. So perhaps I could finish 50 pages in a day. Animal data. If you have the blue book published by Wisdom Publications, the revised edition, we are on page 346. I'm thinking about the suffering of animals. We are not going to read the English each and every word because we're not able to catch up with His Holiness at all, so we'll just try to cover the outlines and read some parts. So this has two sections. So this is the third section, thinking about their general suffering and about the suffering of particular types of animals. Thinking about general suffering. Animals experience five kinds of suffering, eating one another, being so stupid and benighted, experiencing heat and cold, experiencing hunger and thirst. So when you think about the suffering of animals, sometimes people find it to be unbelievable. But on the other hand, If you familiarize yourself with the good qualities that you can develop in the mind, well, it's possible for one to see everything as being pure. And so from this, based on this mind, we can develop such attitudes and perceptions. But if you are not familiar, for beginners, though, on the other hand, when we talk about how the mind can be developed by disciplining it and high realizations of the bodhisattvas on the birth of the grounds and also the bodhisattvas on this accumulation and path of accumulation and preparations could have. But because of our three poisons through which we create the negative karmas and because of which the sufferings come, and accordingly the physical basis on which beings suffer, those lower realms, becomes something which we cannot believe in it. Although we may think that the good qualities may be possible for us, but how about the? Is it really possible to have those bad experiences as animals and so forth? Regarding this suffering of animals, it's something that we can see ourselves not only just looking at them as if looking at some spectacle, but if you really make it your own experience, thinking that if I suffer that, what, and then you can see how it's unbearable, and you can cultivate compassion, as I explained before. So there are innumerable sentient animals. I mean, if we could do something about them to alleviate their suffering, we should. But of course, we cannot do much, and therefore what we can do at least is make our prayers and dedications for them. And so through this, we can actually help. And then with regard to the hungry ghost realm, sometimes it happens with people. One Namgyal monk, when I was young, very young, he was interested in being able to see ghosts or some spirits like Tebrang. And so when he went to Lhasa, so he saw something. Somebody who was a practitioner and who was doing some chö practice, perhaps, and that chö practitioner seems to be able to attract non-human spirits. So this Namgyal monastery monk said that he wanted to actually see them. And so when he returned to Potala in the night, he just waited to see if he could see those ghosts. And some other day, he told this practitioner in Lhasa and told him that he didn't see anything that night. And then this practitioner gave him a hat and gave him the hat to wear in the night. And he wore it, and when he wore it and waited for a while, after a while, the wall, of course, from the windows of the Namgyal Monastery monks in the Potala Palace, of course, it's if you look down, it's all precipice. So he saw a very a pale-looking being who actually came to the window and looking at him from outside. Of course, there was no place where the ghost could stand like normally. But and then there is another story that I have to tell. In Chatting or some calm region, one lama was actually blowing the horn in the night, without any lamp, offerings of lamb, butter lamb, or anything. So since it was dark, so when people in that place who were receiving teaching from this lama, so there used to be a case and story that many ghosts and different spirits came and actually touched on the head of these disciples, human disciples, who were receiving teaching from. So Simga Chatimpa, he told me this happened, and so this Rinpoche said that this Rinpoche, to the left of His Holiness, says that he, that Lama was actually from his native place. So Rinpoche, can you do that? Can you actually attract the ghosts by following this practice, lineage of the practice? So the reincarnation of that lama, so such strange things could happen. And when we see the people going into trance, possessed by some gods, I mean, there are things like that. So animals are something that we can see, but regarding the other sentient beings, like the hungry ghosts and so forth, there are. They also do exist. So I don't know if all of the things that are described in the text exist, but generally speaking, these are possible. And experiencing hunger and thirst and being exploited or made to work. The suffering of animals are the least of the three lower realms, yet in such rebirths they eat one another and suffer. Animals with huge bodies, sea monsters and the like, have bodies with hugeness, long. Some sea monsters are types of fish, others whales. So the whales are one of the biggest animals in the sea and the oceans that are capable of swallowing them. I don't know, His Holiness is saying, I don't know about the yojanas, which is the measurement given here, have many bodies, many yojanas long. So yojanas are like roughly leagues. And there are even whales that can swallow other whales. Many smaller animals infest the bodies of monsters and eat them. There comes a point when the monster can no longer bear this, and they rub their bodies on the underwater rocky mountains. This kills the parasites living on their body. The oceans are made red for many yojanas or leeks. The larger creatures devour the smaller ones. So in the oceans, there are many different types of animals, species. Deep down, several miles underneath. So there are other animals which have no sight, eyes. So if you are born in such realms, mainly you would be ignorant and stupid, benighted. Though it can bear them, the animals of great oceans are heaped on top of each other and must live with the one acting the other, eating the other from behind. Creatures reborn in the dark depths of the oceans between the continents do not recognize each other. Mothers do not recognize their offspring just after giving birth, and vice versa. They eat whatever falls into their mouths, and must live by feeding on each other. So even the animals in the human realms eat each other. Hawks eat little birds. Birds eat worms. The beasts of prey and deer kill each other. Hunting dogs stalk deer and kill them, and so on. You should not look on all this suffering as if it were some spectacle happening over there. You must meditate on it in order to gain insight into what happens when you are reborn as one of the sentient beings. And so forth, and then Jayabhagavat told us more of the inconceivable sufferings they experienced. Page 347. Once a lama picked a long red worm, a worm in his hand, and asked, "Aren't you a Kampa monk?" "I am," it said in human speech. "We cannot be certain. We won't be reborn as such worms." One can cite this story. The father of Bumbo villager died, and Milarepa predicted that the father would be reborn under the piece of a dung in the valley's height. We might wonder, how could we ever get such a rebirth? But this might be, in fact, only an hour away. When we are reborn as worms, we have to live wriggling under the ground just to keep breathing, or we might get eaten by birds. But even if there are our upper half, still we would not die. Our lower half would continue to wriggle. How can we be certain that we will live like this or not? Even if we do nothing else, we must work hard at preventing our rebirth in such base state. So when we travel sometimes in cars and motors, some dogs actually bark. So when sometimes in the monasteries, when the musical instruments like horns are blown, some dogs also howl. So this was a comment regarding our dogs coming, and for the wrong reason they act like a demon has come inside. And some animals are like quine-like in shape, with no arms or legs at all. Once a lama in Thakur regularly received butter from one family. They sponsored him and meat one from another, but the lama had not consecrated them. He died and was reborn as a she-yak that used to give a lot of milk in the household of the family that offered the butter. Later, the yak fell down a ravine and a river carried it off. So when you have created some of your own karma, the karma will not give you any exception. So for me, someone like me, who has the title of the Dalai Lama, this could happen. So the yak fell down the river, and the layman who had given the meat found the yak. When he had eaten its meat, he discovered writing engraved on one of the ribs. I have repaid my debt of meat to the so-and-so family and my debt of butter of family such-and-such. Lamas, monastic officials, geshe scholars and the like may get exemptions in monasteries, but the law of cause and effect makes absolutely no exceptions. So this was the place where Sonnen's comments, I think. If we are not careful now, we're now on page 348. Next section is thinking about suffering, in particular of animals. This has two divisions, thinking about, one, the suffering of animals living in overcrowded environments, and the suffering of those. Number two, the suffering of those dispersed animals. More dispersed animals, thinking about regarding the first. Most of these animals live in the depths of the great oceans, the great depths between the continents. Some of them live in lower reaches, and others in the higher, like piles of discarded dregs from beer making. The next section is thinking about suffering of the more dispersed animals. So when people disrespect people who are giving teachings, they are creating very grave negative karma. So if we also, while wearing the monastic robes, disregard others, then it's not good, making people to disrespect the monastics. So if you wish to live as a monastic, you should do whatever is necessary to keep up with that. If you can't, if you think you cannot, then you should leave the robes and live as a layperson. And once I met somebody from Tibet, and he had put on a very clean robes, monastic robes, but had hair also. So I told him, judging by your hair, you look like a layperson. Looking by your robes, judging by your robes, you look like a monk. So I say this directly to people. So I have no way to tell whether the person cut his hair or he left the robe. As if saying that whatever you say, tell me, I'm going to go back to my native place, I don't care. So we should be very careful and when wearing the robes to be. So even if you may not think you are creating, you may not be, regard or have any regard for creating any negative karma, but you are giving opportunity to other people to criticize the teaching of the Buddha. And in the Chinese used to say that the monks and nuns are the people who actually oppress other people. And when I first visited Mongolia, there was the USSR still existed. You know, I visited one in Mongolia. I visited one museum, and there was a drawing or art which depicted a monk in robes, monk's robes, but with a huge gaping mouth. And into the mouth are people, lay people were walking into the that mouth, and so that actually depicts oppression by the monks. And the curator who was describing me these things, I mean, he felt really shy, embarrassed. And I told him, you need not be embarrassed. This is actually depicting something that is true. So, for the monastics, the Arhat Sagalha has said, make your life, this human body, a meaningful one through meditation and practice and study. And you should not be content just with the wearing the robes. And so this has to be taken as an advice for us. So who are wearing these monastic robes, we should check whether by wearing this we are actually serving the Dharma, contributing to the Dharma, or being disgraced to it. The higher animals press down on the lower ones who have difficulty even in breathing, thinking about suffering of the more depressed, dispersed animals. There are other animals in human realms, and they have limitless ways of experiencing suffering. We have all possible costs for taking these rebirths. They are still powerful and many in number. The most powerful of them are, for example, being disrespectful to the Dharma and its exponents and celibates, calling each other animals. These are illustrated by the story of Manav Kapil. Once in India, someone acted as a benefactor for those members of Sangha observing the monsoon retreat, but the benefactor gave shoddy goods. He was reborn in foul-smelling mud as a swarm with a monk's head. So what does that mean, monk's head, being with a monk's head? So does it mean that the worm had a shaven head? I made a joke earlier. So Ling Rinpoche used to always make joke. When we do the sadhana of Guhya Samaja, it mentions that when it comes to imagining the deities on one's body, from the crown to the throat, you have to imagine such deity. And so one time, one lama said that monks having bald head and also with beard and also goiter. So the Lama said having these three is ornament of for monks. And one monk in the audience actually felt proud and tried to stand up like amongst the audience. And then the Lama said, if you have all three in together, it's an inauspicious sign. Great sins take us to hell, rebirths. Medium sin, to hungry. Once someone said a certain monk looked like a monkey, foreseeing that he took 500 monkey rebirths. These stories come from the sutras. Great sins take us to hell, rebirth. medium sins to hungry goats rebirth, and small sins to animal rebirth. They are thin. So this is true. The way a sin becomes great depends on the intention. This is true. The merit filled or material object involved, and so on. By great sins, we do not mean obvious things like killing a human being. We will in future lives disappear into the lower realms because of the karma of inadvertently going joking about comically potent beings such as our parents or insulting them under our breath. The assurance of not being reborn in the lower realms will not come when we have achieved the patient stage of the path of preparation. So he's done so saying, take tea, since tea has not yet come to the rest of the people. His own is saying, imagine that you are taking tea. So do you know this story? In Tibet, in the past, at one time, one Lama was giving a teaching or an initiation, and there was a nomad, Apohor, they are called, had brought a lump of butter in his chupa. And when the Lama was giving the initiation, of course, each and everyone would not be touched by the different implements. And the Lama said, just visualize you are receiving this blessing and this initiation, that initiation, and so forth. And this Apohor pulled out his butter and said, please, Lama, you also imagine that I'm offering this butter to you. So the treasury of metaphysics says those who have gained the patient stage will not fall into the lower realms. This does not apply to us. So as I said this morning, when you reflect on the qualities, the great qualities of bodhicitta, it has the potential to purify negative karmas that you have created over eons. And so when you have this bodhicitta and even meditated on a few moments, it really helps. And Aryadeva has said, even if you doubt about have some doubt about emptiness, having critically thought about it, I mean, that doubt can turn the samsara wretched. And so, with bodhicitta, whatever merit you can gain or create, they will help to purify negativities. And so, by thinking about the dependence in terms of causality, you think of avoiding the negative actions and adopting the positive ones. And by thinking about the reality of dependent origination in terms of dependence, in terms of designation, then you could create the causes for liberation. So if you could, Kadampa masters used to say that bodhicitta can help in purifying negativities as well as accruing merit. And bodhicitta will give us long life and more friends and peace of mind. Whether you wish short-term or long-term happiness and benefit, and of happiness for oneself or happiness for others, you should cultivate bodhicitta. If you're not able to cultivate it, it's a different case. But if you can, you must put every effort in cultivating bodhicitta, this altruistic intention. So especially those of you who are studying philosophical texts, the great texts, We know our present capabilities. Before we die, we cannot expiate the causes we already have accumulated that lead to the lower realms. And once we are born in the lower realms, we will not gain any means or a refuge to free us from these realms. Engaging in the Bodhisattva, teacher of the Bodhisattvas say, who will protect me from these great errors? With staring eyes, I'll scour the four directions for refuge. But when I see no refuge in the four directions, I'll give way to utter despair. Despair, if these places were no refuge, what will I do then? Observe and you will know that the animal realm is the best of the three lower realms, but it is still impossible for animals to recite even one Om Mani Padme Hum. It is second nature to them to have powerful delusions or the three poisons. They therefore accumulate fresh evil karma and migrate from lower realm to lower realm, engaging in the deeds of the Bodhisattva. It also says, if I do no virtue, when fortunate enough to practice virtue, what will I do when completely blinded by the suffering of the lower realms? If I then practice no virtue and accumulate much sin, I will not even hear the words upper realm for billions of eons. In other words, if we do not at least work hard at achieving some refuge or means of being free of the lower realms in our future lives from before this rebirth of ours has come to an end, it will be too late once we have actually fallen into the lower realms. The only thing lying between us and the infamous three lower realms is the mere fact that we haven't stopped breathing. In a short while, later this year or next or at the most in few years' time, some of us could be reborn in hell and live with our bodies indistinguishable from fire. Others could be reborn as hungry goats and live while not finding even a drop of water or a speck of food. Others will be reborn as animals with sharp horns on their head and shaggy fur on their bodies. We can't be sure we won't get such rebirths. We won't take such rebirths like waking up from a dream. When we recall these things, we should not think of them as stories happening for a way or as mere objects of curiosity. The point is to have insight into what it would be like to be real. Please take your tea. Like to be. This is grace for the tea with prayer to Je Tsongkhapa, Getsab Je, and Kedrup Je, and the first Dalai Lama Gedrin Drup, and Benjin. Reborn in these realms already, and afterward, the certainty that we will reborn in these realms after this life. Suppose we were spectators when many criminals were being punished by a king's edict. Then suddenly we ourselves were seized, led from the mob, and received punishment like the criminals before us. Similarly, now we just feel that many, many sentient beings undergo such suffering in some place called the lower realms, and we look on with curiosity like watching a butcher at a sheep slaughtering yard. But imagine the suffering and fear we would experience if we suddenly arrived in the lower realms or turned into a sheep and were held down by that same butcher and actually felt his blade going between our ribs. We should have this sort of insight. The Buddha, the Bhagavan, gave us this prediction. My Shravakas, in the future, beings will go to lower realms like sand running out of an overturned sandbag. We are like that criminal sentenced to be hurled over a cliff who relaxes by the cliffside. We are unaware of this and act as complacent as an arhat who has done what needs to be done. This is an omen that we will be going to the lower realms. You must see if you think you will be like the small quantity of sand that remains behind in the seams of the overturned sandbag. If our meditations give us insight into what it is like to be reborn in the lower realms, we'll develop renunciation. So sometimes it is better to meditate on the sufferings of the lower realms than on tutelary deities. The amount of recollection of the suffering of lower realms needed is as follows. The two sons of Ananda's sister were put under Moggallana's care. The lads would not study their books, so Moggallana showed them the health. They developed a national reputation because of their recollection of the health. Pramodar Mukherjee reviewed this material at some length and also taught briefly how to pursue this practice. And day 12, Captain Prabhankar Rinpoche gave a short talk to set our motivation, quoting from the work of great Dharmaraja Tsongkhapa. The optimum human life, human rebirth is difficult to acquire. This life does not last long. Familiarize the mind with this and turn away from this life's trivia. Next, we'll go to the Shamar Lamrim. We have come to the point of karma. So second, cultivating the root of all pleasures and goodness, faith of confidence. In terms of the preparatory practices, the benefits which were praised by the triumphant Buddhas again and again as the indispensable foundation of all the definite goodness and high status of the deities and humans, of the three vehicles which were practiced on the basis of the faith of confidence in the law of karmic cause and effect. Also, the disadvantages of the opposite of these is meditated upon as much as one can. Otherwise, the rest are all same. As what was explained before, the actual practice has three parts, reflecting on karmic causality in general, specific reflections on karmic causality, and having reflected on them, how to engage with or avoid the karmic actions. With regard to the reflecting the on karmic causality in general, that the actual reflection and the reflecting by dividing up into specific parts. The first has four parts, of which number one is the certainty of karma to bear its fruits. Is with regard to this, for example, if you sow the seed of sweet fruits like raisin, sugarcane, and so on, the result will also be sweet fruits and never any hot ones. If you sow the seeds of pipiling, perhaps tamarind, or tikta, something which is bitter in taste, etc., which are hot or bitter. In taste, the result will only be hot or bitter. Accordingly, and never a sweet fruit. Likewise, if you commit a virtuous action as the cause, its ripened effect will only be pleasant and not pain at all. Conversely, it is utterly impossible for the non-virtuous action to create, to bear pleasant effect rather than just a painful one. In that case, how is it that we experience bliss from the consumption of a flesh of sheep that has been killed? So there's a calm, and the answer that is given is, of course, the kind of pleasant experience is the ripened effect produced by some virtuous karma created in the past. However, since it comes as a result of killing the sheep as a condition, there is no contradiction even if it is accepted as an effect of a non-virtuous action committed by a living person. As well, we should understand the same logic applies to the pain in the body resulting from doing prostrations, which serve as a condition. Therefore, the fact that we take birth in the pleasant or unpleasant transmigrations owing to our virtuous or non-virtuous actions, and that we also experience various pain and pleasures in those bases of life forms, are attributed to the specificity of virtuous or non-virtuous karmas, giving rise to their corresponding effects without the slightest mix-up. This in the world is analogous to the impossibility of getting a mix-up of crops by sowing the seeds of rice or barley wheat in the field. And then number two is the multiplication of the effect of your karma. The multiplication or proliferation of karma applies to the external world as well. However, it applies more so to the internal causation, as demonstrated by the Blessed Buddha during his visit to Nayagaroda town in the account below. So when a girl from Kapila town who was sent there to Nayagaroda town as a bride in marriage faithfully offered alms to the Buddha, she was prophesied to become a Pratyeka Buddha named Good Prayer Lekman. At that time, the groom, who was from a Brahmin family, didn't believe it and went forward to the teacher and asked, "Do you tell lies just for a meal?" The Bhagavan Buddha gave the analogy of the seed of a Nayagaroda tree, which is only one-fourth the size of a mustard seed and which has grown into a huge tree in the eastern side of the town under whose branch 500 chariots could pass without touching one another. So he convinced the groom by proclaiming, "I could directly see that a small inner cause gives rise to a huge effect." From this account, we understand how our karma proliferates. For detailed rumination on it, we must rely on the Blessed Buddha's scriptural quotations. Regarding how a huge pleasant experience results from a small virtue, its cause, there is a story which happened during the time of the disciples of the Buddha Vipassana. After the Buddha had passed away, once a poor householder couple offered a brand new vase with intense faith to the Sangha community, filling it with clean water, putting a gold coin into it, and covering it with a mirror. As a result of it, so when in 1959, when the upheaval in Tibet happened and we fled, some of the bodyguards have a story to tell. In Duozhong and some places, there was fighting between Tibetan Chinese soldiers. Although some people, pass through a place, an area where the Chinese were shooting bullets, like a shower of bullets. Some people die, but others don't. And then Tibetans also have this custom of wearing what is known as chunsung, like amulets, which are said to protect one from bullets. And because of those amulets, I have met some soldiers, who have told me that because of wearing those amulets, when the battle was over, when they took off their clothes, they could find bullets amongst the crease of their chuba. So someone is now about 82. And until about some years, he used to come to the Tsuglakang, the temple in Dharamsala. So about two or three years ago, he told me that he was 78 or 79. And I asked him, "How long would you stay?" So he told me, "I'm going to stay three more years. And still, he's alive. Quite true. So he was in Duozhong during the fighting with Chinese. And so he had also an amulet. But he was injured with a bullet. So when he felt something strange in his leg, he just felt himself in that area, and he found it was bleeding. He was bleeding. And then he said, this protection amulet, like... So this shows that if you have not created the karma, you will not suffer. If once you have created the karma, it will not go to waste. So while people pass through barrage of bullets, some die, some are hit, and some others not. And if you look at people in the villages, some people we can see have very good success, whereas others may look very efficient, but they have no success. So we'll see, this person is fortunate. He's but sometimes we use the term good and bad luck, saying that this person is lucky and the other one is unlucky. I mean, this is too simple. We have to be able to explain the difference, these differences are happening to people. So also after the Buddha Vipassana had passed away and went on, a reflection of his teaching was left. A fully ordained monk begged food in the town and supplied the provisions for some ascetic monks. So once you have created a karma, the action, the active action itself ceases, but then it leaves an imprint, whether we call it an imprint. I mean, we leave an imprint on the mind, and according to the Madhyamaka, Prasangika Madhyamakas, there is this special term, Shikpa. And so the Shikpa of the disintegratedness of the disintegration of the karma still is left on the mind. And so even if many eons have passed away, since it's not any matter or the Shikpa continues, and there's no way the Shikpa has rot or anything like that. So as long as there is a continuation of the mind in us, the Shikpa also of the karma remains. From then on, he obtained inexhaustible wealth and provision akin to the gods and humans throughout his lifetime, and finally he was born in Kosala as the household Danjila. Who could obtain all his needs just by making his wish, and who later took monastic ordination with the Bhagwan and attained arhatship. So there are stories like this. And how a small negative karma can result in a huge suffering is like this. During the era of Buddha Kashyapa, there was a bhikshu meditator who became annoyed with a leaf from the Eledap tree at his hermitage, which rubbed against the crown of his head, and he said, "How could the Bhagwan, the Buddha Kashyapa, referring to, lay down such a harmful precept as this?" And then he cut that leaf. As a consequence of that, he was born as a Naga Eledap, on whose head grew an Eledap tree, which when blown by wind caused his head to ooze much blood and pus. This is said to persist until Buddha Maitreya appears in the world. Again, when ascetic bhikshu tried to practice some meditation, some other bhikshus read scriptures, because of which he could not meditate. So he got angry and said, "These bhikshus of Kashyapa made noise like frogs all night, because of which he was born as a frog for 500 lifetimes." For details, if you must look at the scriptures, look into the scriptures as they contain extensive accounts. What these demonstrate is the attainment of fruits now and in the future by dint of even a small service to the doctrine, disregarding one precept of misdeed. You would take rebirth in the hell of revival, and disregarding the precepts of individual confession, you would be born in hot hells. As I've explained before, it says. Not meeting with the effect if you have not created the action, number three. Just as a crop would not grow if you did not sow the seed in the field, likewise, unless you have created the propelling action leading to rebirth in the lower or higher realms of existence, it is impossible for you to be born into those realms. Even with respect to the completing actions, there are many past accounts which demonstrate how the effect of karmas are not wasted and how you will not face the effects if the corresponding action karma were not done, like the ones referred below. So on the one hand, we may be believing in karma, the cause of and also believe in the spirits and or nagas and so forth. And when you become sick, even if what you tend to say is, I'm influenced, I have a negative influence from some spirit or gods or nagas. And Kadamba Geshe used to say that our misfortunes do not happen because of some bad day or date or stars, but because of our own karma. And so when people come to me and tell me that they are being influenced by some ghost, I tell them that you should not have such superstition, but even if there may be someone harming you, you should meditate on compassion. So it's sometimes where we are being too much when we talk about having negative influences from gods or spirits and nagas and so forth. We're saying it too much. So sometimes when I see in my dreams some kind of a storm coming towards me or some snakes coming towards me in Lhasa, when I used to say, and I was in my dream, when I saw a small snake, I was saying, I said the Yamaraja mantra, and then the snake actually its mouth got torn away. Whereas in Dharamsala, I had a similar dream, and in that I was saying the Yamaraja mantra, some wrathful mantra, but it didn't help. And then I meditated on compassion, and it immediately went away, that obstacle. And in Dharamsala one time, during the time of Sakya, one of the ministers in the past, the Tibetan government in exile, in one place, I was invited to do some exorcism, something like that. I do not know any of these things, no prayers, rituals for exorcism. So when I reached that place, I meditated on compassion and bodhicitta. And later on, I heard that the negative influence from the spirit had gone away. So I felt that I was not a disgrace or that I had done something good. In Malaysia, one time, early on, one of the hotels where I stayed told me that in one of those hotel rooms, some people have some bad experience, and the room was left empty, usually. And when I... and without telling me, they actually put me in that room. And afterwards, they told me that it became peaceful. The negative influence kind of got pacified, and they were able to use that to accommodate their customers. So, of course, I have been meditating on emptiness for a long time. And in recent times, I could see it's really having impact on my mind in reducing the desire realm level of attachment. Of course, I don't say I have realized emptiness, because saying so would be tantamount to actually going against my vow, bhikshu vow of lying, committing a grave lie. And so it's been about 60 years since I reflected on emptiness with the help of, inspired by Ngodup Chognye, one of my debate assistants from Mongolia. The story of how Tsokpo Chenin is and killed their religious father, and because we are still at the level of the teachings pertaining to the beings with small scope. Next section is karma cannot go to waste. If the external seed of grains are left for many years, they may not rot and not give rise to crops. But unless they may rot and not give rise to crops, but unless they are destroyed by their antidotes, it is impossible for the internal karmic seeds to become impotent, even after 100 eons have passed by. When, therefore, they meet with the right conditions at the right time, their ripened effects will inevitably arise. For example, while the eagle is flying high up in the sky, its shadow will not be visible, but when it eventually lands on the ground, its shadow appears right under its body. Likewise, though we may not know immediately about the virtues and non-virtues we create, but when it's time for their effects to ripen, it's obvious to us whether they are pleasant or unpleasant effects. This is illustrated by the past accounts like these. When the sinner Pakyapu waged a war against Kapilavastu, Moggallana asked the Buddha, if I could throw him and Pakyapu and his forces outside the periphery of the environment, this environment, the Bhagwan replied that to Moggallana, may be able to do that, but the karma of the Shakyas will not go to waste. And so for higher rebirths, there is no greater, no other real actual cause than keeping morality, than keeping the morality. When his army was about to attack the Shakyas, his uncle Mahanama Shakya stood for the Shakyas and asked not to kill anyone until he comes out of the river into which he dived. Meanwhile, as Mahanama remained under a branch, underwater and died there, the Shakyas, who had not done the karma, could run away. However, those Shakyas who had created the karma could not escape, but went back to Kapilavastu from the southern side, even if they ran out from the eastern side. So the author of this text, Shamagyen Lidenzin, said that unless you have a very strong practice of bodhicitta and emptiness, certain tantric actions of increase, I mean, activities of for increase and for extensive and the peace and then also power, subjugation and wrathful actions would be harmful, could tend amount to killing others, especially in the case of using the wrathful actions. So someone I know went to his native place, and in that place there was a custom of killing animals when some lama were to visit the next day. And so he sent some message to the people there not to do that. And so that was actually heeded. So that's very good. However, those Shakyas who had created karma could not escape, but went back to Kapilavastu from the southern side, even if they ran out from the eastern side. And those who ran out the southern side, through the southern side, went back in from the western side, etc., and gathered again Kapilavastu. So the best diet for us is vegetarianism. In the 1960s, I, for about 18 months or 20 months, I became a vegetarian, but later I developed jaundice. All my body turned yellow, and my nails also turned yellow. There was no pain, but this persisted for 3 weeks or so. And I consulted allopathic medicine, Western medicine, and also Tibetan traditional medicine, medical doctors. And so they advised me to, they told me that I had taken too much of milk and also nuts. So because I was used to non-vegetarian diet, they told me to go back to the original diet. And so I'm not taking meat every day, but sometimes. So since I do that, the monastic institutions of great learning centers have also turned into serving vegetarian from the common kitchen, and also in the schools, and also in the Dharma centers in the West. I request to do that. And here in Bailakuppi settlement, there used to be a poultry farm, and I asked them for what they have this, and they said they are not killing the chickens, but they said it was for they were kept for egg. And then I asked what when they stopped giving, the hens stopped giving the eggs. And then there was no particular response. So I said that unless it's indispensable for your economy to have this poultry farm, and don't keep it. And therefore, we didn't start big farm or fish farm or anything like that right from the beginning. And regarding the vegetarian meal, Indian meals are very delicious and also nutritious as well. So, of course, sometimes people may have issues with, I mean, health issues. I met one German doctor who was a specialist on knees. He told me that my general physical condition was very good, and so he told me You are not an 18-year-old now, but 80 years old. So I found this to be a great spiritual instruction for me. So having reached 80, over 80, I'm at a stage of decline of my body, deteriorating stage. So sometimes people say that fish and chicken are less harmful to the body, whereas the red meat are not harmful for the body. And so this doctor told me chicken and fish are not good for my our body. And so I should take, he told me, I should take the red meat. I told him this story of staying a vegetarian for 20 months and suffering jaundice. And so the gallstone had actually started from that time in me. And so later I actually removed this. I had the gallstone and bile removed from my body, and you consider me as Avalokiteshvara, but I'm missing one of the organs in the body. And so when I had jaundice in the 60s, I let us tell people that I turned into a living Buddha, as the Chinese use this term. So vegetarianism is really good. If you if your body get used to vegetarian meals right from a young age, it would be very helpful. So as a matter of fact, this body that we have is precious. And because of this body, having this body, we have the opportunity also to reflect on bodhicitta and emptiness and so forth. So with regard to the path that we could develop, and regarding the basis of the path, we have this human body, and as Bodhisattva Charaya Avatara says, we have to see the pros and cons of the situations and see what is the greater good. So we are on the part of part which is second reflection on specific karmas individually. So with regard to karma, there are those which are done but not collected, and which are both, and so forth. So to establish the karma and its effects, there are three parts. It's negative karma, karmic causality, and positive karmic causality. There are two parts. And then the first one has three subdivisions to it. That is presenting the actual path of negative actions, the degree of their gravity, and their results. Shama Rinpoche himself was a great scholar, and he was someone who must have been very straightforward. So this is about killing. When you intend to kill anyone, whoever it may be, it does not make a difference whether your recognition of the other being is mistaken or not. However, if you mistakenly kill someone while you intend to kill a rival, or if something like a bug dies under your feet unintentionally or unbeknownst to you, there is no path of action of taking life in it. Once there is an intention to kill, whether you do it yourself or hire others to do it, both involve the path of action. While ostensibly refraining from sin, if you covertly hire others to kill someone, it is particularly great wrongdoing. Though monastics are prone to committing the less of severing others' lives, when big lamas journey to benefit beings, they also herd a number of sheep and cattle and a few lay people with them. And judging from this, they are acting in a gravely sinful behavior. And so in the past, there were two persons from Theosophical Society, Morris Feldman. We were very close. And he told me that I don't take meat. I won't eat meat, but if I take meat, then I will kill the animal myself and not let someone else kill the animal and take the meat. Knowingly urge, as also if you have knowingly urge to do business and to journey to that purpose and so on, to hurt animals, sentient beings, the negative action fully qualifies as a karma of killing, which is both done and collected. Some people sell large numbers of their poor, feeble cattle and sheep to butchers, or engage in fur business involving killing thousands of baby sheep. In such cases, as the buyers kill those animals, the seller will also accrue heavy negative karma of severing life of the animals, corresponding to the number of animals. Also, since the ordinary monks may also be prone to taking life by asking the lay people to kill sheep for the sake of meat, they must not have the illusion that they would not be committing the negative action of killing just because they did not use their own hands in severing the life of the sheep. There may be those who do not realize that they commit a moral defeat in their moral defeat of their ordination vows by involving in a monastic war or sending evil mantra spells. However, you must not merely look at others' faults, but bring up in your mind by various means, such as in motivation, by other methods, those who take others' life and pledge and pray over and over again like this. Whatever others may be like, as far as I'm concerned, for now, I'm helpless and I'm incapable of everything, averting these people from wrongdoing, etc. But at any cost, I will not be one of them. Just as the Buddhas had laid down the monastic rules, not allowing the incorrect behaviors of contaminating and misusing water, killing animals, digging the earth, and so on, you should see to it that you would find the means to avoid harming bugs, even the minute ones, as soon as the motivation to kill sheep, etc., stir within you. Be aware of it and consider your own faults like this. The Buddha Bhagwan adored all sentient beings like his own beloved child, and the sentient beings cherish nothing more than their own life, so that I dare to inflict unbearable pain of severing the life of sentient beings just for a few mouthfuls of meat, and yet claim to be a follower of the Buddha. How shameful. And taking what is not given. So that was about the killing. Stealing another person's material possession by finding it beautiful is stealing out of attachment. Taking away objects in order to harm one's enemy is stealing out of hatred. Some non-Buddhists taking it to be true that the entire universe and its living beings belong to the Brahma, and that since the Brahmins are children of Brahma, if they take away the wealth of others, it is not a wrongdoing and thus appropriate others' possessions. This is stealing out of confusion or ignorance. Regarding intention, while it is the same as the previous cases, but in the motivation that you, with the motivation that you wish to separate the wealth from its own honor, and therefore either take it yourself personally or employ others to snatch it away from the honor. And hence, when you feel you have won it, then you, as the mastermind motivator, engages the complete karmic path of stealing. For these reasons, when a human leader or great lamas or tulkus incite big wars or battles for the sake of political rule, they rarely understand the gravity of wrongdoing they have committed. Once the soldiers have engaged their rivals, even when the rains of negative karma of killing and stealing poured down on them, corresponding to the extent of killing their rivals and looting their wealth. Taking things by devious means are multifarious. Taking possession of things through conceit, such as what was lent to you or deposited with you for safekeeping. When doing business, deceiving customers by overcharging the commodities, or by installing crafty te and sang weighing instruments, or when an incumbent head of or proctor of a monastery demands money from poor simple monks by threat of pretext, on the pretext of having violated the monastic rules and regulations. So the people with name of Lama must be very careful, as as a Dalai Lama, if I take advantage of others and think that this is mine and so forth, it's really bad. Rather than that, if I think that I'm just a simple human being and just a Buddhist monk, a simple Buddhist monk, I mean, there's no danger of deceiving others. If I feel that I am the Dalai Lama and consider myself very important, give self-importance to myself, I mean, I am the only one person. There's only one Dalai Lama in the whole world. Whereas if I think that I'm one of the 7 billion people, I have friends, 7 billion people as friends. So all of us are sim in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering, and in which naturally brings me closer to others. So if I emphasize myself being the Dalai Lama and give self-importance to myself, I'll be left alone, and then there will be this feeling of loneliness. Otherwise, other people will not listen to when you order them to do things or that thing. Nobody cares.
Chesed
Is all of this is reading from the 10 negative actions, passage on 10 negative actions. And now is the line. Basis the entity you speak about should be free from it, conventions of noble beings. To whom to tell lies should be a human being, who by definition is one who can talk and comprehend the meaning. Motivation, attachment, if you tell a lie in order to protect oneself and one's relatives or friends, or to gain some gifts or honor. Hatred is to lie by keeping the truth from one's adversaries because it helps them, and to lie in order to harm them by deception. So the motivation can be also ignorance, telling lie, beholding true what the Brahmins proclaim, that is, there is no moral downfall if you lie about the five important points. Then there is recognition, changing one's recognition from the eight types, such as seeing meaning if you have seen something, but change your mind to say, no, I haven't seen it. When you speak in order to execute your intention to lie, and the verse come out of mouth or your body, acts and which, amounts to lying, another person also hears or comprehends your speech or physical indications, then you have covered the actual path of lying. If someone comes with an offering and says in his last words, the deceased person asked me to offer this to a bodhisattva, but I have no way to tell who a bodhisattva is. So I offer it to you, my Lord, please bless him. And without saying a word, if you accept the offering, it will be a big lie, so be careful. When caring for one's near ones and overcoming one's adversaries, doing business and making money, we are prone to lying. Particularly, these are bad times when charlatans and liars are more in demand than those who are wise and principled. Therefore, there are many who put out a strain of telling lies one after the another about seeing this or that deity or spirit and deceiving other people. Therefore, those who follow everyone they come across could be prone to indulge in lying by making a mountain out of a molehill, claiming to have high realizations, what actually is an ordinary human experience. It's very difficult to tell this won't happen to such people. The four defeats refer to the first part of the four non-virtuous actions when done by a bhikshu, and they are parts of those four actions. The basket of Vinaya teaching recommends many precepts to stop committing these four defeats, and therefore you should practice whatever you can according to your ability. There is no translation for Shama Lamrim, so we are reading accordingly the Tibetan text. The Tibetan text printed by Janjo Lamrim Committee, we are on page number 161. Next is about the harsh speech. And for the motivation, a harsh speech or words towards someone can be also motivated by an anger towards that person. It can be also due to having doubt about other person. And there are some people also who claim that using harsh speech do not have any negative actions, which is all wrong. And the harsh speech can be different things, depending upon different people, calling people with the name a son of the slave, and also calling some people from the caste, and also calling them deaf and dumb, and limping and so on, and also calling other people as thief. And to the Odin ones, if you abuse or accuse them with something to do with their Vinaya commitments, it's also considered as a harsh speech. But if you do not directly indulge in those harsh speech, and if you do it through some other people, then it is not harsh speech. It won't be counted as harsh speech negativities, and it will be counted as mere gossip. So among the 10 negative actions, we have completed the 3 negative actions pertaining to one's physical negative actions. And for the speech, the first one is telling lies. Then a divisive speech, which is also completed. Then the harsh speech. And the first 3 of the speech negativities are also categorized under also categorized as gossip. They also consider as a kind of gossip. And the gossip, which is different from the first 3, can be singing some songs out of desire and attachment, and speaking about prostitutes, and telling beautiful things in order to gain some offering, and so on. And even in reading texts, if you read without having devotion and faith to the Buddhist texts, and if you read the non-Buddhist texts, it's maybe also considered as one form of gossip. And even while reading the Buddhist texts, if you read it without having devotion or faith, those readings, the mere recitation of the text will be also a kind of gossip. And even within the Buddhist text, even it may be categorized as a Buddhist text, but if the text wrongly presents the teachings of the Buddha, reading those texts can be also come under the negativities pertaining to harsh speech. And also the recitation of the mantras with the motivation and the main purpose to gain happiness in this world, and also for one's living, can be also considered as gossip. And in one of the texts, it's also stated that if you give any kind of teachings with the hope that you may get some offering in return, it also comes under this negative action. Therefore, it is very important to, even for the masters and lama, to look at their motivation before giving any initiation or teachings. And gossip, the negative action of gossip or indulging in gossip, is considered as one of the main reasons to make your life out of the way and non-dharmic. And it is very difficult to identify and recognize this negative action, and you will end up indulging in these negativities. And the next one is the last 3 are pertaining to one's mind. And the first one is covetousness, and it has to deal with thinking about other people's other people's houses, other people's belongings, and thinking as if that could be yours. And sometimes this is also followed by the anger towards the other people, and we consider those angers as being arisen through attachment. So out of attachment to other people's belonging, and without obtaining or getting that object, makes you feel anger toward that person. And also for this negative action, of course, first there is need to have a motivation, then the actual action, and ultimately the kind of satisfaction towards the completion of that that action. And motivation, according to Arya Sangha, is to look at or think about the other people's belonging, and mentally thinking that if you could have those, if you could have those things. And that kind of motivation can even increase with as your attachment to acquire that object increases. And as that attachment grows further and increase further, then it result in your action of actually stealing and taking that thing, the other people's belonging. And also in some other texts, it is stated that such kind of actions also need to assemble five different features. And the five are calculated depending on some evident and some latent. Then according to Vinaya, we also have the object. The first, in terms of the negative actions, in order to complete the action, so it can be the necessary thing can be categorized as first the object to commit that action, then you need the motivation, then your action, then finally feeling satisfied with the action. And for us who always are not concentrated and do not be aware of our own actions, it is very possible that such kind of a negative action will continue to come in our daily life. Especially we continue to have such kind of feeling that in this life, I wish that my life can be longer and my wealth and may all those increase. So we tend to have such kind of feeling in our daily life. And also for those who call themselves practitioners, they also have such kind of feeling that if their fame or popularity increase and people call them practitioners, so they also have such kind of aspirations. And some people also have wish, some masters also wish that they be respected more compared to other masters. And all of us tend to have the feeling that may all our wishes are fulfilled. And that is in terms of oneself. But for the other people to whom we labeled the title as our enemies, and you aspire or you wish that those people do not have anything, and may their wishes not be fulfilled, and may they not prosper, and so on. And next is the wrong view. And so the wrong view is the 10th of the 10 negative actions. And the wrong view arises from an ignorant mind, which is very easy, that we all will understood it. And the wrong view here can be assuming or thinking that there is no cause and effect. Things do not arise out of the cause and effect relationship. And also, the wrong view can also arise by the causes for the wrong view can be anger, aversion, and also ignorance as discussed, and also attachment. It can be also looking at the nature of all the phenomena as not being existing through cause and effect. And this can be as for all the other negative actions to complete the action of the wrong view to generate the karmic result as per the other negative actions. Of course, it also need to assemble all the other attributes. So such kind of the views at the initial stage can be the preliminary views, which actually makes one's wrong view grow further. So among the different kinds of wrong view, the one which looks at, which considers the non-existence of the karmic and its result, and also also non-existent of Four Noble Truths, and thinking as if and the non-existence of the Three Jewels, and so on. So these are the actual the wrong views which assembled, if assembled all the functions and all the attributes could result in huge negative karmic results. And once one develops such kind of wrong views, all the positive imprints and accumulations that we have within us will be erased. And one will start engaging or indulging in all the negative actions. Actually, even for us, such kind of wrong views may not arise very quickly, and it is unlikely that we will have such kind of wrong views towards the Three Jewels and the cause and effect and so on. But in this degenerated time, where the sentient beings have very less merits, and when they travel to different countries and places, they may end up practicing very strange cultures of not learned, not according to the texts. And in such situations, one may end up developing such kind of wrong views. So therefore, it is important that we have to pray ourselves that we may never be reborn in such a place where we will end up developing such kind of wrong views. So till now, we have been always investigating other people's fault and accusing and abusing other people, and we never investigate our own actions. But now the time has arrived that we have to investigate our own actions and our own mind. And we have to also tell other people that we shouldn't indulge in killing and so on. And some people have saying that if you hit a horse or some other animals, there is no negative sin out of that, which is wrong. And some people may even feel that I may have lesser karmic results if I do that, which is also wrong. So the oneself and other people, as we know that it is very easy for us to indulge in such negative actions. So if we contemplate on this fact again and again, so when we walk into the society and market within the many people, it will be easier for us to control the three doors, the body, speech and mind, and so we may end up doing less negative actions. So next is the presentation about the light. Which kind of negative action is lighter compared to the other, and which is heavier? So the first is general presentation about the 10 negative actions and also the order of the lightness. So if you summarize all the presentations about the result and their nature as presented in different texts, it can be summarized in six different ways. So the first one is, if you indulge in this kind of negative actions all the time, then that kind of action will be heavier. The karmic result will be heavier. And also something that you always commit in your daily life will be heavier. And if such kind of action, that you indulge all the time, and if that kind of action is again supported by the very afflicted motivation, it will be even heavier. And we tend to generate pride towards us, if even for those practitioners, when they study and when they become a scholar, then they get attached to their own practice. So this happens to all the masters. So again, back to the text. And of course, again, the negative actions which arises or pertaining to one's spiritual master and so on will be heavier compared to other. No need to speak about the combination of all the negative actions that we perform in our daily life together, which will the negative result will be very severe and very huge. But even for one single negative actions that you commit, and the result, if it is presented in front of you, it will be very huge. So I think we will stop here. It's almost 3 now. So I will stop here. I think we have covered quite a lot of page today. I think we are on 48. So almost we have reached 50 page target. So if we are able to finish 50 pages per day, then we will finish the whole text in 10 days. Thanksgiving mandala. This is the final Lamrim dedication prayer from my two collections. Was the space that I have amassed from working with effort at this practice for a great length of time. May I become the chief leading Buddha for all those whose mind's wisdom mind is blanketed by ignorance. Even if I do not reach this state, may I be held in your loving compassion for all lives, Manjushri. May I find the best of the complete gratitude parts of the teachings. And may I please all the Buddhas by my practice. Using skillful means drawn by the strong force of compassion, may I clear the darkness from the minds of all beings. with the points of the path as I have discerned them. May I uphold the Buddha's teaching for a very long time. With my heart going out with great compassion, in whatever direction the most precious teachings have not spread or once spread have declined, may I reveal this treasure of happiness and aid. May the minds of those who wish for liberation be granted momentous peace, and the Buddha's deeds be nourished for a long time. By even this credited path to enlightenment completed due to the wondrous virtues granted of the Buddhas and their sons. May all humans and non-human beings who eliminate adversity and create conducive conditions for practicing the excellent path. And may oceans of prosperity spread everywhere. May the teaching of Buddha spread all parts of the world, particularly the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa.
Mm-hmm.